Well, hey, money lover, do you wish you had a do this next guide with the exact steps for building wealth? Because you can. It's called the 7 Steps to Wealth, and it contains a proven framework and actionable plan to build your confidence and grow your wealth. It starts with step 1, decide. Decide to take action today by grabbing your free guide at hendershotwealth.com/7steps. That's Hendershot with 2 T's, wealth.com/7steps. The only cost is what you could lose by not taking control of your financial future. Hey there. Welcome to Money Coaching. What you're about to hear are excerpts from live money coaching sessions that I'm now offering. These sessions are amazing, especially for the clients who really get into action, making changes in their financial lives. Money coaching is for anyone, business owner or not. We're editing out all the identifying information for privacy. Even names in the episode titles aren't their real names. And we're doing our best to edit out conversations that just may not be useful for you as a podcast listener. Because of the editing, when you're listening, occasionally there will be transitions that seem abrupt, but that's okay because we're keeping in the conversations that we think listeners will most resonate with. Enjoy the session.
I always say the CEO's job is to be a private detective for profit. You're always looking for what are we doing that leads to profit down the road. So the first question you want to get answered is, well, what the hell happened in between 22 and 23 that I was worth $500,000 loan last year, but I'm worth nothing now? Because we just need to repeat whatever happened last year or get rid of what got input in 2023 that brought it down.
Yeah.
Okay, good. What do you want to share with me about either how money's gone for you up to now or what brought you to this conversation, this opportunity?
What brought me here was that I know that we're going to be okay financially. I don't know what it's going to take.
So from my perspective, in terms of creating, I use the terms financial freedom and retirement synonymously because they're the same thing. It just means when your income from your investment or business assets can replace your earned income for the rest of your life. Okay. So the first thing we do as financial planners, we look at how much are spending on an annual basis to live a life that you enjoy. So you have your needs covered and I would imagine some of your wants. Is that correct? Is it all of your wants or some of your wants?
Some.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, good. So we look at what are you spending now? And then the next question is, what kind of a nest egg is it going to take to replace that income should both of you stop working? And no entrepreneur I know ever wants to say, I'm going to stop working, right? Because it's part of our identity. It's our creative outlet. It's how we fulfill on possibilities, right? It's power. And fair enough. However, behind the scenes for all of our business owner clients, we're still planning for you to build a nest egg that can replace your earned income because you're either going to, and this is a fair dose of reality, so forgive me, but you'll either die or you'll get sick or you'll get tired, right? I don't have any business owner clients who are working into their 80s. I have maybe one in their 70s. Most people around the 50s or 60s start going, you know what? I'd like to do some other shit, right? So, and the mathematics of that are, it takes about $1 million and a diversified investment portfolio to produce approximately $40,000 a year in income in perpetuity. So forever, we practice what's called capital preservation. So we spend just the earnings in the account. But of course, you've seen what the stock market is like. The stock market doesn't have positive earnings every year, but you still have to pay your mortgage and your bills and your needs and your wants. So we need to be able to spend from the account, even when it has negative returns. So that's why I could say to you, oh, we'll just treat it like a CD and always spend the earnings. And you're going to spend 10% 1 year, but then you're going to owe the account 10% the next year, right? That's unacceptable. So all of the finance people around the world got together and said, what's the amount that I can spend from this diversified investment portfolio every year for the rest of my life, even when the stock market's good, when the stock market's bad? And the answer is somewhere between 3% and 4%. Okay. So when I look at your financials, yeah, we do need to start getting serious about moving money from the business assets over to the personal assets. And I would love to see the two of you contributing to like a 401k, I mean, that would be the best option. That gives you the most opportunity to save. Have you considered doing 401ks in your businesses?
I didn't even know we could.
Did someone tell you you couldn't?
I thought it was for big companies.
Oh, no. No, you can have a 401k with two people. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. So I can give you resources. I mean, I'm not saying do that tomorrow. That's not going to be your homework this week. We're getting ahead of ourselves. But I think right now, if what you're saying to me is you have your needs covered and some of your wants, then the question is, how can we create and extract more profits from your businesses in the form of personal income so that you can not only have a few more of your wants fulfilled on, but also save for the future? Does that sound like about what you're in your mind's eye? Is that how that was going to go for you?
Yeah. Well, let me just say it back to make sure I got it. It's like, so right now looking at what would it take to get us to where we're covering our needs and some of the wants comfortable. And then, but also planning for when we do decide we're done working or tired. Let's just say when we get tired. So that's the first thing. So that way for that, we can continue on in that same lifestyle.
Exactly. Yeah. Last year's taxable income was $276,260. I don't think you saved a significant amount of that. Did you? So from that amount, there's only three things you can do with personal income. Okay. You can spend it, you can pay taxes, or you can save it. So when I look at that number and I don't see that you're saving in accounts that are 401k, an IRA, a Roth IRA, I don't know how much you saved last year, then you either spent that money or you paid taxes on it. Okay, great. Are you paying yourself regularly from the business? Are you on payroll?
Yeah, like $3,000 a week.
Okay, so that's right about $150K a year. Okay, perfect. Yeah, so when you run a business, you can, it sounds like you know, but you can take money out of the business in two ways. One is payroll, two is profit distributions. Profit distributions avoid the double taxation, the self-employment tax, okay? But it's really neither here nor there. When you run a small to medium-sized business, you could say, for conversational purposes, the amount of your payroll income plus the profit left in the business plus your profit distributions that you took that year, that's the profit in the business. Now, of course, you have to pay yourself a market wage as a CEO, or you don't really have a business. You have a hobby, right? So I'm glad you're paying yourself well. But so I think that's a term a lot of business owners don't get right, is understanding that the profit left in the business at the end of the year, you could consider that your income. Now, if you don't take it out of the business because you're going to reinvest it in something for next year, fair enough, but at least mentally account for it as a reinvestment, because that's your, you know, profit is like the magic from running the business. Now, I understand you're in the middle of a thing right now. I'm not making any prescriptive recommendations. I'm just giving you ways to think about it, because otherwise you just have a job that pays you $150,000 a year, right? Yeah. I mean, in a business, right, in theory, every dollar you borrow, you should be putting into the business with an expectation of earning an ROI. So the mindset of a CEO is very different than the mindset of a person who's growing his or her net worth in a personal ecosystem.
Yeah.
You know, if you were wage earners, I mean, many of my clients are wage earners. There is no way, except for asking for a raise, to raise the ceiling, financially speaking, right? And so it all comes down to, it's a trade-off between how much you spend today versus how much you save for tomorrow. And with business owners, there's a little bit more magic in it. There's like more ways we can turn the dials. And then I think the other thing that I see is almost replete with business owners, and I do see it with you too, is you're so focused on growing, developing the business that there is, I don't want to say lack of focus, but just a distraction from the task of growing your personal net worth. It's like, we're fucking busy, Hillary. We have kids, we run businesses, right? Like, you know, didn't even know she could have a 401k, right? And not only that, but we probably don't realize what that could provide for you, right? It's, nobody's really out there talking about how to get rich slowly. We're all sort of, especially entrepreneurs, waiting for the big payoff. But, you know, you're in a business, you know, painting doesn't scale. So the only way to make real money in painting is to own the market, like Walmart, right? The Waltons are some of the richest people on the planet because they eke out a profit margin on every little trinket that gets sold at Walmart. And then that family gets to take, you know, their portion of that profit, but they own the market. Like Walmart owns the space, but like a piece of software, you develop it once and you can sell it an infinite number of times, but that's not the case with painting, right? And so the question is, how can we get to be compensated very highly during his working years? Because from an exit perspective, it's not as likely for you as it is for a software company engineer that there's the potential of a multiple seven-figure exit, right?
Right. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. If it were up to me with you, my question would be, how can we get to $250,000 a year as fast as possible, right? Because that gives you a meaningful amount of money to be able to spend, pay off your debts, but then really begin to save seriously for the future so that we can get your money compounding. In my world, you're really young, right? Most people don't come for financial advice until their mid-40s. And the first thing I have to do is tell them it's okay that they didn't start saving in their 20s. Yeah. So you have a long time. You have plenty of time to save and get that exponential growth happening in your wealth. And if you're going to work as long as he does, then so do you, right? Because it's all about time between now and when you need to annuitize that nest egg or turn it into an income producing asset versus a growing asset. A growthy asset is just something you've plunked into the market, into a strategically built portfolio, and you're just going to let it ride. You're just going to let it sit there for years and years and years. And then, so according to economic mathematics, if your stock market portfolio earns 10% per year, it should double in value every 7.2 years. So it'll go from 2 to 4, but then 4 to 8, 8 to 16, 16 to 32, 32 to 64. That's exponential growth, right? You can make that 200,000 or whatever, like you can add zeros, but that's the math of exponential growth. So that's what we want to get working for you. I definitely have clients who earn more in their investment portfolios in some years, in good years, and we do suffer through bad years, but in good years, they'll earn more in their investment portfolio than they do from their, you know, Silicon Valley executive role or what, you know, I mean, I've got clients here earning just $900,000 a year and they live in a 3-bedroom, 1-bathroom house. I mean, I'm not even kidding, right? So the incomes have to be high, but I do like it when they earn more with me than they do from their job. My focus would be, let's get you two set up to be doing that as soon as possible. Tell me what this business does and how it makes money.
So we work with women in 8 countries and we create work around the world. So far this year, we've created over 12 years of work with a woman. And we work with women here. So women here can start their own business. It's a direct sales model. So they can start their own, you know, small business and make money, whether it's a little bit or a lot.
It's a direct sales model. So you have levels of people in the US selling products that are being made by women in
India, Ecuador, Guatemala.
Okay. And so it's like blankets and jewelry.
Yep.
Okay. And how many women are currently selling in the US?
About 30.
How long has the company been in existence?
12 years.
Oh, 12 years. Okay, so you're at like stasis. Are you planning to change anything, expand anything big, put new energy resources into any particular aspect of the business?
I mean, I'll answer this way. I don't know if I'm answering your question, but the only thing that we have to do at this point is bring on more salespeople. The fact that we're only at 30 is a real breakdown. And the people who are on have been around for years. So the only way to do it now is team build. So like what efforts we're putting in is all around team building, like recruiting.
Hey, money lover, it's Hillary. When I'm not behind the mic here, I'm running Hendershot Wealth Management, a fee-only fiduciary financial advisory firm that works with women and couples who want to take their finances to the next level. That fee-only part is important when it comes to financial advisors because it means there are no kickbacks or incentives built into the advice we give. We succeed only when you succeed. Listen, I've made all the money mistakes in the book, but I've taken myself from nearly $600,000 in debt to a seven-figure net worth, and that's what I want for you too. The wealth, not the debt. If you're ready for financial freedom, let's chat. All of our clients start with an initial no-obligation call, like a meet-cute. Not a formal meeting without a romantic relationship on the other side, just a potentially lucrative one. Your finances are your future, and who you partner with matters. So grab your coffee and let's get started at hendershotwealth.com/contact. That's Hendershot with two T's, wealth.com/contact. And now back to the show.
Okay, great. So what would be really great is if at the next call, we can explore the details of who is selling effectively, where they are, how you found them, their psychographic traits that make them great at selling. In other words, do they live in an urban environment, a suburban environment, a rural environment? How many parties are they doing a week? Why are they so motivated to sell? I mean, there's lots of things they could sell. Why do they want to sell your thing, right? So how can we, I want to get really honed in on where your best people come from and how we can find more of them.
There's a company that's like us that has major connections and partnerships and almost exactly like us, except for faith-based. That's like almost the only differentiator, which is sort of a big one, but they're doing something that I have not cracked.
My guess is they're doing more rah-rah than you are.
They are. And they're doing a lot of partnerships and PR and all that stuff.
This is the beginnings of your profit generating activities deck. And I will share with you my own PGA deck next time.
What does PGA stand for?
PGA stands for Profit Generating Activities.
Okay.
And we used to call them Key Performance Indicators. Mm. I would recommend that you go listen to episode 209, the three-step formula for increasing profits in your business, the profit pyramid. So we need to figure out what your company's profit pyramid is in order for you to effectively report on it. But of course, in any PGA deck, you're going to have the standard business numbers. So I would love to get a deck going like this for you, even if it's just either a spreadsheet or a Word doc in the beginning, because there's a lot of working pieces to your business. So I want to know where the women are who are creating the products and how they're getting paid, who buys the supplies, who buys the materials, when does that get paid, how do the manufacturing women get paid. I want to know what the, if you have direct sales, you probably have, you said teams, so you would want graphics of that showing how much money those people are making, so we can figure out what's the top line revenue and how is it disappearing before it gets into bank account. More importantly, how can we make more of it show up in a bank account?
Yeah, that's the most important one.
I don't have the mindset about direct sales that a lot of people do, because I think that it's so great specifically for single moms to have a product that they can sell, that they don't have to develop, bring to market, pay for manufacturing, hold inventory, right? It's like a built-in part-time job with freedom and time freedom and geo freedom and all that. So I'm a big fan of it, but the models that are working are out there, right? And they all do these huge conferences and getting people together, building relationships.
No, I hear what you're saying. I do. I mean, I just want to add, like, what also we have that I love is like, I get to create all of that you said. That's a bonus for it. And I think that can be said about any direct sales company. And just like, I love our company because we're also making a huge, huge difference. And we go and we meet the women. We travel together. We're going to Vietnam together in April. And that's, travel's my number one passion. And I get to do that with people. And I don't know if there's something more for me to be talking about there, since that's just such a natural thing that I want to talk about. And that's who we usually attract, is somewhat adventurous people. But my point is that there's so much that I love about this business. And it's like, I just like really want to make money doing it.
It takes a certain fortitude. It takes an energy. It takes a reason, a why, right? Yeah. Yeah. So that energy has to come from somewhere. And if I mean, 30 people certainly isn't appropriate for a big conference, right? I'm just saying there would have to be some substitute for that, some source of energy for the company. And that's how I think of the VP of sales. You created your own energy to create the company. So that energy came from somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. You mentioned other revenue streams. Do you have time for that?
So here's something else I'm proud of is I've really gotten so many systems that I used to be working 80 hours a week. And now I probably work 35. Great. So not like I want to be taking on a whole bunch more, but I'm also like, I'm really committed to getting some of the stuff I do not like marketing off my plate. I have somebody in place for that. She's just contract, you know, it's like over the year, it's going to cost me like $7,200 or something like that. Plus my sanity.
I'm going to tell you, my hunch is, so in a typical corporate structure, you would have the CEO and then the VP of HR, the VP of sales, like operations, technology, all that, right? Would you run the company? You're all of those things until you officially delegate that role. You don't need a VP of HR, but you do need a VP of sales.
Yep.
My sense is you've gotten too into the VP of operations role because it doesn't take risk and because it feels like it has to get done.
Yes.
When you're done with those tasks, you don't have the fucking energy to be the VP of sales.
Yeah. Well, and it's scary and it's risky.
It's risky. It's risky. And you hear no, you get rejected. You get accepted, but you also get rejected. I would bet if instead of hiring a $7,200 marketing person who is not going to communicate your heart to the world, sorry, but they're just not, you know, and maybe keep the $7,200 marketing person. I mean, I'm not saying I'm against that person. I'm saying rather than delegate marketing, which you cannot do effectively until you have a really well-oiled machine that's already working. If you spend the first 4 months of 2024 being this VP of sales for Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and then did the other shit on Thursday and Friday, like I just made that up. Maybe it's the first half of the day or whatever, that I think you would be shocked at the numbers that would show up. So when you show me your debts, that's interesting. And it definitely is an obstacle I, as your profits consultant, want to take on with you. It's just also ancillary to the business. It's not revenue, sources of revenue, sales, costs. It's none of those things. It's just debt that you took on before now, right? So we got to work on filling the coffers. We need to get lots of money coming into the top of the business, and then we can tweak the costs and everything. But I mean, that debt has to get paid off. It's just that, you know, if you're paying $17,000 a month to debt, imagine what your life is going to be like when that debt gets paid off.
Dude, I know. That's flat here.
Does that resonate with you if I say you're distracted doing VP of ops stuff?
Yes, it's completely.
Can you take on an intern and teach that person to do?
Yes.
Great. That's awesome. You're a little bit in bootstrapping mode. It's going to take us a couple weeks to figure out. There's a number at which you actually experience more freedom, less anxiety, less sense of failure, less grief and sadness, right? Where you get your needs and much of your wants fulfilled on. But it has to be the bridge, because if you keep taking on debt, whether it's business debt or personal debt, you're dead in the water. So it has to be like a bright line. And by the way, I'm glad I use the word era, because what I didn't say out loud to you is if we do this work together effectively, so that it actually produces the results you want, this is the beginning of a new era. Like, you won't think the same about money when this is over, right? I see you two taking on debt for both personal and business reasons. And if you're going to grow your net worth, that is no longer an acceptable tool. Because if you put your debt on ice, your FICO score is screwed for a few years. So you become not debt worthy. But also, if you come out of it and just take on more debt, then you just start the cycle over again. So it is a mindset. It's a brand new era. Well, we got to figure out the ratios and the things that are turning the dials in your business. You probably already know them. You just don't know that that's what you should be looking at, like a decoder ring. So the first is to put an end to the era of taking on debt. The second is to start the era of wealth building. So every dollar not spent is saved, and to become two people who as a couple are committed to building net worth. I would say in order to retire fully, the two of you need at least $3 million earmarked for retirement. And I know that because we've already talked about your personal spending. So I kind of have a sense of what you're spending. You could make it with $2 million, but let's start with one, right? Let's get to 1 million in positive personal net worth. And once you've built that skill set of growing and preserving wealth, you are off to the races. Really, you can do anything as business owners. If you were wage earners, it'd be a little different. But as business owners, in my opinion and my experience, you can author your life. You can write your ticket because you're like doing your best to run these businesses, but building your personal net worth hasn't been in the forefront yet. What I'm asking for right now is more of an energetic shift, like a willingness, a commitment, a drive from the two of you. You're like, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to do what builds our net worth. And once you're looking with that rudder, you know, they say context is decisive. The whole world will occur differently to you. What do you think?
I like it. That context has not been at the forefront at all.
Yeah.
You know, it's an idea, but it wasn't anything conscious.
Yeah. And it probably comes from your childhood. Like either nobody ever told you that that could be a thing, or nobody ever said it should be a thing, or you just didn't see people doing it. Like it was an inherited way of being about money. And especially when you got into business, it's like, oh my God, I'll save money when I'm making more. And that, unfortunately, that threshold never gets crossed. You have to decide. So I'm glad you like it. That's a good start.
Okay, as we wrap up today's conversation, I do need to review the legal stuff I need to disclose as a fiduciary financial advisor offering wealth management services through my company, Hendershot Wealth Management, LLC. The opinions expressed on Love Your Money are my own, and they can change. The content I provide for the show is for general education, and it's not intended as specific investment advice, nor do I recommend any specific financial products. I can't guarantee that my statements, opinions, or forecasts are always 100%. Right. Of course, I wish I could peek into that proverbial crystal ball, but so far, I haven't found it. As you know, past performance is not indicative of future results. I do talk a lot about indexes, and I want you to know that you can't actually buy an index because, of course, when you take a list of companies and create a product that allows people to invest in those companies, there are fees and expenses involved that reduce returns. Remember, all investing involves risk, which, as you know, means you could lose your money. And I have to tell you that there is no guarantee that any investment plan or strategy, including my own, will be successful. And that should keep my lawyers happy.